believe in it. They wanted me to impeach President Bush for the Iraq War. I didn't believe in it then. I don't believe in it now. It divides the country. Unless there's some conclusive evidence that takes us to that place. Thank you.
Yes, yes, it's Friday, March 15th, 2019. Hope you didn't have your heart set on an impeachment weekend. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, CNN releases Oppo research dump on Bernie Sanders, showing that, well, he wanted to nationalize most industries in the 1970s. And that's bad because why? The House votes 420-0 on a resolution to make Mueller's final report public. But Lindsey Graham wants to throw his body in front of that bus and block the resolution from being taken up in the Senate. Manafort gets more time in jail, and his lawyer keeps lying. New York State drops new pardon-proof charges against Manafort moments after he was sentenced in federal court. 49 people dead and 48 injured in New Zealand as a white nationalist terrorist opened fire on two mosques in Christchurch, the country's third most populous city. It was the worst mass shooting in New Zealand's history. Yep, he was an 8chan kind of guy. The self-proclaimed fascist left behind a white nationalist manifesto and live-streamed part of the shooting. It's freaking sick. Boeing grounded due to problems with their 737 MAX that led the Ethiopian airline flight that led to the crash of the Ethiopian airline flight that killed 157 people. That's been pretty wild to watch, and more stuff is coming out about what Boeing knew and when. And the breaking news this week is that rich people are cheating the system to get their kids at a top college and university. That shocks, well, nobody really. Now we just have more concrete proof from the U.S. Department of Justice that the system is rigged. Big time.
There you go. Got the guillotine.
Yeah, exactly. Torches, check. Pitchfork, check. Chances are that you already know by now that Beto O'Rourke announced that he is running for president. I mean, you can't miss him if you have any social media life whatsoever. He hit social media hard this week as he hit the campaign trail in Iowa. He seems to be hoping that performing excitement and positivity, he will can avoid taking progressive positions, or actually any positions on key policy issues, actually. You know, like Medicare for All and such. Beto's entry to the race brings the total number of candidates to 17, with Uncle Joe expected to announce next week. And if you care, Cory Booker is officially dating Rosario Dawson. Nancy Pelosi says she's against impeaching Trump, just like she was against impeaching Bush, because it divides the country. Never mind lying to everybody so that we kill hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and thousands of American soldiers. Yeah, you don't want to divide the country, God forbid. If it's not divided already. Hundreds of thousands of students are walking out of school today as part of the global youth climate strike. They are taking to the streets to protest the failure of politicians to take the necessary actions to stave off a dystopian climate future. Organizing for coordinated strikes grew after the Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg held a solo protest outside the Swedish parliament last September. And Tucker Carlson has his I'm not a sexist racist asshole band-aid ripped off this week. We learn his thoughts on semi-literate chimpanzees in Iraq, child marriage, and primitive basic humans, otherwise known as women. Good thing Paul LePage was the voice of reason on talk radio this week. And Lehigh University is having its Me Too moment as an associate professor files a federal lawsuit saying that she was used as a, quote, sacrificial lamb for Lehigh University's own racial agenda to appear more progressive than it actually was. And it's Meek Mill weekend. Whoop, whoop. Philadelphia City Council honored Mill's work on improving criminal justice system and gave us all a reason to celebrate this weekend. The Pennsylvania House has officially introduced legislation to bail out the nuclear industry, which is creating lots of strange bedfellows on both sides of the issues. And as there's some kind of pleas to go check out those pipes that haven't been looked at in a while. Democrats won two special elections on Tuesday night. Larry Krasner, staffer Movita Johnson Harrell, will become the first Muslim to ever serve in Pennsylvania. And Bridget Malloy Kozorowski blew out the Old Forge Pizzagate-loving boomer Frank Scavo in a district that voted for Trump by 7%. Today's last call, NASA's huge space launch system looks like it may be sidelined in favor of private space companies. It was supposed to be the main launch vehicle for NASA's Orion spacecraft, but enter galactic capitalists. There it is. The new U.S. crew, new U.S.-Russian crew launched the International Space Station from Kazakhstan on Pi Day. That's P-I. Two of the astronauts on this mission were on that aborted flight that kind of had to abort mid-launch last October. Elon Musk took the live stream last night to unveil the latest Tesla vehicle. That one is a mid-size SUV, and it's coming in around 45 to 60 grand. Expected to outsell even the Model 3 at this point. Workers at San Francisco's Anchor Brewing vote to unionize. They'll be longshore. We've got a list of Irish craft brews for you the St. Patrick's Day weekend. Tomorrow, Free Will releases sexy goodies once again. And big news for Free Will. Free Will confirmed that it is opening up in Souderton, PA, in the lobby of Broad Theater, under renovation historic movie theater in the center of town. Remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And check out his podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. A daily podcast, folks. If you want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. And you can help bring pull no punches, homegrown progressive media right to your doorstep or your tablet or your phone. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. If you go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? Just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click the big blue donate button. I don't know what is wrong with my mouth today. And give us whatever you want. But the best way you can help support progressive media, keep the media in the movement in the media, is by becoming a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, another week with all sorts of fun, glorious, crazy shit once again.
Yep, here we are.
Here we are. So I got just like a baseline question for you.
Yes.
All right, I just want to make sure I got my definitions like right. My understanding is that when you do oppo research on someone, you're supposed to produce like scandalous things or things that are going to be a problem for their campaigns. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I just thought I misunderstood the term. So, all right. So I just wanted to get that straight. So, because that seems
opposition.
To be
oppo is short for oppositional.
Gotcha. Research. Not like opposites attract kind of thing.
No.
Yeah. So CNN was didn't quite get that, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like we're gonna be seeing a lot of videos of Bernie Sanders and news stories about Bernie Sanders in the 1970s and 1980s about how crazy of a socialist he was. And the latest story came out wanted to say that he wanted to nationalize all the main industries, which is actually like a pretty normal fucking idea. Like transit is nationalized in Europe, in England, right? The health is nationalized over there. You have countries around the world that have nationalized telecommunications and that have broadband and internet access that's way faster than what we have here in the United States. I mean, like, you have nationalized industries, oil, natural resources, and other things around the country, around the world, utilities like water and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, it's not that radical of a fucking idea.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a pretty normal idea when you think about it in the grand scheme of things.
Well, and especially, you know, what kills me about that more than anything else is like
they're really going to go hard for him, like as this like.
But I mean,
as
what
this,
I'm saying
like,
is like
crazy socialist from the 1970s.
What I'm saying when he ran the first time, right? There was all that stuff, this oppo research stuff, right? You know, the quote unquote that's kind of coming out against him. This is things that he's talked about in the open.
Yeah, he's been pretty clear about this since the beginning.
It's not like they uncovered some like kind of like, you know, like steamer trunk that was like hidden in like behind some concrete wall with like these plans.
It was like a briefcase full of documents got thrown into a dumpster somewhere and someone happened to come across it and like there's just like all this like magical information out here on Bernie Sanders.
No, and I remember, I mean, some of the stuff that's in that article, that CNN articles, is like, I remember, like, from when he ran in 2016, right, that, you know, there was a lot of people who didn't know who Bernie Sanders was, right? So that, you know, a lot of the news media was doing these kind of, like, background stuff, and you see all these, like, you know, people, like, playing back all his old radio shows and all his other, where he was talking about the same thing that he's talking about now what he was back then, right?
Yeah, like, someone put a, like, shared a video of him from the 1980s, and he got interviewed on like Today Show as like the socialist mayor of Burlington, Vermont, and he was saying, "No, like we are a small C conservative state, like Vermont. Yeah, like we're very liberal, but we're also like small C conservative. Don't touch our guns. We have private rights, but we're not like the conservatives, like the modern conservative movement that is getting brought like devoured by like these real ideologically like religious views and stuff like that." And it's like, yeah, no, he's been saying this stuff for 40 years now.
Yeah.
And shocking that like he said this back in the 1970s.
Wait, breaking this just in, Bernie Sanders has been consistent for 40 years.
But also, I mean, I really think we should like when we talk about like the history of this stuff, there's a lot of history of this stuff in the United States and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, examples of this still happening today. Tennessee Valley Water Authority, you know, is a big thing that comes to mind. You know, like private industry, private electric utilities never had any interest in bringing power or electricity to some of the poorest regions of this country. You know, and it took the New Deal for that to happen. And it took public work projects, like nationalized public work projects, like the Tennessee Valley Water Authority, to deliver electricity through Southern Appalachia.
Right.
I mean, like, and people, like, look at this online, like, and their brain's melting because socialist gobbledygook. But no, like, this shit, it's there. It's in our history.
Look, I mean, this is just the legacy.
And we're seeing the same stuff today with broadband.
Yeah, I just think these are the burn scars of the Cold War. You know, I mean, it's like, seriously, it's just that, you know, the stuff that just keeps on, like, hanging on, that people feel they have to kind of, like, say this discourse. You know, I'll talk a little bit about this in today's last call. I forgot to put it in the notes, but there was a great interview with Kim Stanley Robinson on the Antifada. One of the things that he says is like, you know, he growing up in the 70s when it was kind of pretty radical back, you know, back then, just he said, you know, as he's people today, you can't really explain like just how radical the culture was at that point. And he said, but back then, even back then, people who would kind of have socialist leanings and things like this would not use the word term socialism. He said, what's remarkable today is people are openly talking about it. Right. And so because it was such a scare tactic for so long that people had to even avoid the term, what's different now is like now we can actually talk like openly about this stuff by saying like, hey, you know what? Look, you look at kind of countries in Europe who have like, you know, everyone covered in terms of healthcare, that have free public higher education, that have that have bandwidth and internet access that puts ours to shame. Right. I mean, all these things are public goods that have been part of a social democratic process, right? Or democratic socialist process, right? I mean, however you want to kind of couch your terms. But that's what we're talking about here. And the United States is really the outlier on this.
Yes, like in England, then you have the National Institute of Health.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's like, I mean, like, yeah, like when you nationalize it, they become government programs pretty much.
Well, it's not even a program. Like in England, it's like you actually have like the National Institute of Health. Those people then become government employees, right? So they're employed directly by the government. In most other cases, right, with the single payer system, right, the doctors are not working for the government in those cases, right? What's happening in those situations is that the insurance companies are not kind of like making a profit off your like lack of health or health.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like a pooled insurance thing. It's the whole idea about we come together to do things that we can't do on the individual. So glad CNN got that straight then. I'm glad we got we're going to get more of that. I think
that's more lessons from Bernie Sanders woke, or like early Bernie Sanders, who is just shows you that he is the same exact person. He has not changed one bit.
Yeah, I mean,
in his whole entire generation in politics.
Well, if anything, you could see like his views, you know, have like kind of moderated, like to certain degrees. Like, and by moderated, I mean like he's focused
more
on practically and how to, yeah, but how do you actually accomplish this stuff? You know, that's really, you know, the only difference that I can see. And, you know, look, as far as the mainstream corporate media wants to continue reporting on Bernie Sanders wanting Medicare for all of us, or kind of like new proposals coming out, like Elizabeth Warren's kind of like free childcare, like. Keep it coming. Keep that oppo coming, everybody.
Bring on mainstream it.
Yeah, totally mainstream it. Bring it all in, right? Because I don't know. The students that I teach at, like, on an everyday basis, right? And I sit there and they know that they are kind of saddled with debt. They know that Pennsylvania students are kind of have the second like largest load of student debt in the country, right? And they look at kind of a future that looks not so great, right? When it comes to climate change, when it comes to job prospects, when it comes to a whole range of other things, right? And you're going to tell these kids, right? Or kids, they're not even kids. You're going to tell these kind of students, right? That like, oh yeah, it would be a bad thing if you didn't have to saddle your future with debt. It would be a bad thing to have a prospect of not living in a kind of quasi dystopian future. No.
Oh, and don't break a leg while you're like out on working a part-time job and don't have health insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get saddled with $10,000 or $20,000 in medical debt.
Exactly. But crazy. So, you know, I have to say that's got me excited. So, I mean, it's got me excited to see that, these quote unquote oppo stories come out and they're going to try to use that against Bernie. And look, I want to be clear. I'm saying that use it against Bernie because number one, I mean, Bernie's like he's like your hardest target because
he has a money machine that will not be tapped dry.
Well, yeah, exactly. You've got a network. You have an organization that is not reliant upon kind of the big donor class or the kind of, you know, getting the best coverage by CNN. Right. It's based on the kind of the on the ground mobilizing that's been going on. But then also you got a consistency of a record. Like that,
and
nobody else running
millions of dollars. The other campaigns will probably outraise. I mean, he will probably get outraised money wise, but like it's like AOC. They got the money, we got the people.
Yes, no, exactly. And in Sanders' case, though, it's not even either or, right? It's like, yeah, he might get outraised, but he's got like a significant war chest and people.
Yeah.
So we'll see. This is going to be, you know, this is shaping up to be an interesting run. So I'm not going to talk too much about the Manafort stuff and all that kind of thing. Yeah, liar's going to lie, cheater's going to cheat, criminal's going to go to jail. The only thing that was kind of good about this week was that, one, if you want to have some good reading, read what the judge said to Manafort, basically before sending him off to the slammer. Like a thorough dressing down about what a horrible human being he is. It was great. Just good stuff. But the big news there, of course, is that New York State, like, you know, literally the ink was not dry on like Manafort's sentence in the federal courtroom. And New York State dropped a whole series, 17 or something like that? New sets of charges that are going to be state charges,
which shows you that Don Jr. and the rest of the family will be going to state prison.
Yeah.
Sometime in the future.
Yeah, at least they'll be close to home.
I don't know. They might have to
Trump
put them up
state prison.
Put them up towards like Watertown or something like that, like on the other side of the state. Put them out in Buffalo. Make them drive 350 miles.
No, put them out in Buffalo, Tonawanda, right where all the chemical plants are. That'd be a good spot for them.
Yeah.
Feel right at home, like the freaking penguin from Batman. he would be. You're like Two-Face. So that's going to be interesting to follow. That's there. Some of this disturbing news this week was, the more I read into this, it's just like, horrific. You see the kind of scourge in the virus that has been spread through places like 8chan and these message boards, right wing kind of like, you know, these dark web places in which allows this kind of neo-fascist white supremacist stuff to fester and to propagate. 49 people dead, 48 injured down in New Zealand, Christchurch, after two mosques were brought under attack by, you know.
And the shooter had a pinwheel drawn on his vest, which is, anyone doesn't know, pinwheel is a Aryan symbol that white nationalists use, so there's no denying that
is. He released like a something like this long manifesto too as well, and he even like said on HM before he went, basically said, you know, now finally that the person that they call a fascist is actually going to be a real fascist. Right before he went out and killed these people.
And Candace Owens from Turning Point USA was named in there as an inspiration, which again it shows you how these fucking groups like Turning Point and these like so-called libertarian groups are part of that libertarian to alt-right pipeline.
Exactly.
And they do nothing but cater to racists. And, you know, like it's, yeah, I mean, I got more I could expound, but like, it just shows you that this is who the Republicans are getting in bed with. The Republicans, Pennsylvania Republicans brought in Candace Owens, to speak a couple of times.
Yep.
And this is who like they're not making any qualms about who they're going to gang in bed with.
Not at all. Not at all. This is who they want. So Sean, did you, just to show that the rule of law is still working here, were you surprised by the fact that rich people are paying off colleges and universities and have a scam to get their kids into their schools? I was like, really? This is news, folks?
I was surprised they came down hard on these people.
Well, I think the deal was too as well. There's part of me that's saying the reason why we're getting this now is because all these kind of California and Hollywood people were kind of involved with it, and so I could see Trump telling the Justice Department, "I think those freaking left coast liberals, Hollywood types, you want to bring them down, go after them hard." I'm not saying he did that. I don't think, but I could see that. But it was, I think, either really what really you come down hard on it is because.
Well, I mean, like this one guy did get like six or seven. I mean, if you see this guy getting money and you're, hey, you know, you're watching him, like, you may want to tell us about that or you go to jail for,
It was, I think what finally kind of led to why it's been such a huge deal is because it was so systematized, right? And it had, you know, you had this one guy, Singer, I think his name is.
Yeah.
All right. And you had him at the kind of the head of it. But then you had, you know, dozens of like coaches and, like personnel at the universities who are in on the deal.
Oh yeah. I mean, it just shows you this is an institutional issue.
Right. Exactly.
And this is going to be, I mean, it shows you this for a large part, like the scam that college sports is.
Yep. Or not even sports. In some cases they were brought in, right? These people were brought in. They literally took their kids.
Scamming the SATs and stuff like that.
Well, they bought them, like went to the sporting goods store and bought a jersey and took a picture of like a picture of the kid and said he's on a team. Right. In one case, they actually had to get the kid. They photoshopped him into a pool to make it look like he played water polo. And the photo got sent back to the parents. Just saying, no. He's like a little bit too far out of the water. You got to put him down a little bit more to send him off.
The one student being on the USC trustee's yacht as the story broke.
That was nice. That makes a little like awkward like trip back to shore, don't you think? You might want to look at this. Oh man. So that was it. That was something else though. That's I'm good. Good. You got corruption in higher education, take it down. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah.
Big news in some sectors of the world, right? Was that Beto O'Rourke announced that he is indeed running for president. And he wasted no time hitting the campaign trail, heading out to Iowa, jumping up on chairs in coffee shops and talking about how America is all America and we're all America. There's no left. There's no right. There's no up. There's no down. There's no black. There's no white. There's just America.
Right? There's no problems at all.
There's no problems at all. Healthcare for all.
Sunshine.
Nobody's got the answer. Only when we all come together will we have an answer. Right. I have to say, I was pretty surprised at I've seen some of his talking points that he's gone out on the trail with. And they have been like I said this to you, I think, like while looking at his campaign release video when he's sitting there with his wife, is I was really struck by the fact that it just felt like a mashup. Right. Of different kind of Democratic candidates kind of positions without any having any positions, just like stripping their language out and dropping these kind of tones in the hopes that the tone themselves is actually going to stand in for policy positions. And frankly, I just don't think that's going to carry the weight. I really thought that if Beto got in, that it was going to be that he was going to come in as a really as a really strong candidate because of his charisma, so to speak, right? Because of the Obama effect. And but you know what? Some of his stuff seems to be falling flat from my eyes. Just because, you know, he was asked by reporters. I mean, he's being asked by reporters on the campaign trail. So he's like, so many of your colleagues and fellow members of the Democratic Party, people who are now your competitors, have pretty much kind of most of them have come out in favor of Medicare for all. And her question to him was kind of like, how long are you going to promise that, until you can deliver that or something like that? And he didn't even say that. So she was basically assuming that he was going to be doing the same kind of stuff on Medicare for All. He just backed right away from that. He was like, well, you know, it depends on there's so many different ways to get there. And no one party or one candidate. What's that?
Obamacare is great. We got to fix Obamacare.
Well, again, that's what, you know, and again, I mean, we all know that, you know, the Obama people were really hot on Beto to get in there.
I think he's not going to last.
I don't think he is. I mean, I was actually surprised. When he came in, I thought he was going to come in and it was
going to cause run for Senate in Texas again. And
that's what I think he should have done.
And that's, I mean, like, look at the down ballot effect he had. Like, even if he ran and lost again, there would have been more down ballot victories and more, like, laying out an infrastructure for eventually pushing Texas over the edge into a blue state. I mean, face it, it's only a matter of time before Texas turns blue.
No, totally.
I mean, it's going to happen like within my lifetime. And it might happen. It's one of those like unicorns for the Democratic Party where it's just like you're always one cycle away from like turning Texas blue. Like, I think like Beto running in Texas in an election year could have turned Texas blue.
Yeah. And I think so. I agree.
Like, yeah.
So I don't know why it just seemed weird. It just seemed an odd launch to me. And I know there's going to be like another major launch. This is his kind of like, you know, preliminary, you know, get your feet wet.
Now,
but you would think that you would come out with, you know, given what you've seen so far, you'd come out with some kind of clear policies and an agenda instead of just like, look at me. Look how positive I am. Look how enthusiastic I am.
Now, what do you think about Biden?
I was just going to ask you.
Courting Stacey Abrams.
Yeah.
I think Stacey Abrams is smart enough to say, talk, we'll continue these conversations if it gets to that point. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? After the primary. Like, I think that it's a... I don't know.
Look, Stacey Abrams, like, yeah, I agree. Stacey Abrams,
like, I feel like,
I mean, she's going to do what she wants,
like,
but
like,
she's,
I feel like it's really disingenuous that Biden,
yes,
might be looking to use Stacey Abrams to whitewash his political career, which is really shitty.
Yep.
I mean, and to use that in the front of a campaign instead of because he has a lot of serious issues that he has to address. I mean, like, Sam Cedar laid it out really good. Like, he was all for gutting Medicare and Social Security as part of the grand bargain. You know, it was Biden that was the one who was whipping up the support for that. It was Biden, you know, who fucked up the Clarence Thomas hearings and, you know, who prevented more women from speaking out against Clarence Thomas and buried allegations against him and, you know, race issues and, you know, full support of disastrous crime bills in the 90s and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of skeletons in his closet, and I find it really disingenuous that he – like, I feel like Stacey Abrams has enough political savviness to, like, obviously see through what's going on at this point and not be used for anyone's political gain in a primary field like this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll see how this plays itself out. I mean, because she met with him, right? She met with him yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, like, people were talking about, like, she's going to be a potential, like, VP pick. Which I think she would be great. I know I heard, like, you know, rumblings that she's going to be running for Senate in Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, I think
and she wants to run for. I heard from a few people that I know down there, and that I've met over the past few weeks that she wants to run for Senate in Georgia. And these are people who were working with the campaign or working on the voter rights issues down there.
Yeah, and that's true. And she, you know, who knows? I mean, she might get a taste for a run, to like a presidential run too, as well. Who knows? I think the worst here's for me, like what becomes problematic, like when it comes to like with Stacey Abrams, is that look, I don't think Biden is going to catch fire. Yeah, I think there's too much energy kind of elsewhere,
and no one's going to vote on. Like, this is like the Scott Wagner strategy. Like, we're gonna pick our running mate for the lieutenant governor. We're gonna run together as a slate, and then like no one cares about the lieutenant governor. Like and the job of the vice president is, you know, almost pretty useless.
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be. And so, I mean, I don't know. I just think that, look, I think Biden, like I said this to you before, is I think that this is Biden.
It's very fitting that he's going to be announcing right during the Ides of March when all the knives will be coming out.
Yep. So we'll see. I mean,
he's going to get.
We'll see. What I think is going to happen here is that you're going to have these parallel tracks. Look, Biden is trying to. If Biden gets in, it's going to be an attempt. Same reason that Beto was courted so hard.
Biden and Beto are going to run that same.
Right. That's the lane that they're going to run.
And Cory Booker.
Yeah, Booker's going to try to straddle things, though. I mean, Booker is like, you know, look, I'm not a huge fan of Cory Booker, but I mean, Booker has got a little bit more
savviness.
Well, he's got more like practical accomplishments for things that he does, right? Where that's not the right word. Like Booker has played that game, right? Of being on, you know, in the center lane, right? In the kind of very much in the middle of the party, while at the same time, you know, being really engaged with kind of with young folks, being like, you know, literally active in his community, you know, to the point where, I mean, you know, the famous story about him running into a burning building and saving somebody else. But he did crap like that.
And right? He's a very sociable person.
Yes.
Very outgoing.
And he's got really positive relationships on the Hill, right? Because he does, you know, he works with everybody. And I think he actually believes that stuff. So, you know, so I think Booker can straddle that a little bit. I think Booker's just going to get squeezed out, though. I think I don't think he's going to. But we'll see. Yeah. I mean, you know.
I don't see Klobuchar.
No.
Or Gillibrand lasting.
No.
I mean, there's 17 people running for president. Like, out of the big ones, Klobuchar, Gillibrand, they're going to flame out pretty quickly.
I think so. I still think Kamala Harris is still going to be one of the strongest contenders in the pack. There's no doubt about it. I think because she can.
I don't think Warren's going to get much support because of Sanders running.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I think what's going to be interesting is if when it comes to the debates, it's going to be interesting to see if there's going to be some tag teaming going on, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this last week. I was thinking, like, because if you have Sanders and Warren essentially setting the agenda in terms of what people have to respond to, that makes for a really interesting dynamic, right? Because, you know, Warren.
And it would be good if it gets Sanders on one night, Warren on a second night, and it's like two nights in a row of that same like messaging.
Yeah, essentially you're pushing an agenda, right? You're pushing a particular agenda and a platform, which is really good, and that can have it. That can do weird things to a to a primary. So or somebody where, you know, I think Kamala Harris is far more polished as a politician than Elizabeth Warren, for example. Right. Elizabeth Warren is phenomenal on policy stuff. Right. Even if you disagree with some of the policies, she's excellent in terms of hard nose, like questioning and working out kind of details about how you actually do stuff, like, you know, coming up with proposals of how you actually go about regulating things like Facebook. Right. That's pretty important. So I don't know. So we'll see how this goes. We'll see how this goes. The one thing we don't have to worry about, though, is any kind of impeachment of Trump. Because Nancy Pelosi is definitely not in favor of impeachment because it divides the country. Period, Sean.
Period. Which is the same excuse that she used back when, you know, Bush was committing war crimes.
Yeah, exactly. Or when he lied to all of us and sent the country off to war. Last time I checked, we sold troops there, right?
Yeah. And millions of, like, at least a million Iraqis were killed.
So I don't know if consciously and purposely falsifying information in order to send the country of war qualifies as a high crime and misdemeanor or not. Apparently not, according to Nancy Pelosi, because then it would divide the country. And dividing the country, whatever the hell that means, right, was much worse than killing all those people and going off
and much worse than holding people accountable. Like the thing about impeachment is not political. Like, this is not a political thing. Like,
it is a political thing.
I mean, but it's more, it's not, okay, it's political. It's not electoral. This is not an electoral issue. This is about accountability. Do you hold someone who is, like, committing these crimes as Trump is, before getting in office, especially the financial crimes we're finding out and the tax evasion and the fraud that's coming to light, and pretty much how he ran his company like a mob syndicate? Yeah. Like, do we allow that type of corruption to go unchecked, unaccountable, and hold no one to account, and set this precedent for future presidents coming in down the line? Like, I mean, like, we didn't hold Bush accountable with impeachment. Obama didn't hold Bush accountable by charging him for war crimes, because that was, again, we did not hold the banks accountable for the crimes that they committed.
Right.
Like, we should we like yeah.
No, but look, I look at
like,
this.
We, like, this is about accountability. Like, this is not about, like, and this is about establishing precedent. This is not about, like, trying to, like, the odds of winning or losing an election.
Well, you know, and the Pelosi comes out and says that, like, you can't impeach Trump unless we have, like irrefutable evidence or something like this, right? But, like, if you don't have the impeachment hearing, you can't establish that. Right. Unless you're going to have like some other crime that is external to this. The thing is like the impeachment, the impeachment and the kind of criminal law and civil law are different things. Right. You don't have to commit a crime in criminal law in order for that to qualify as an impeachable crime. Those things are different. And you can see that in the freaking Constitution. Right. So the question is whether or not you take up this process. And why I say it's a political process, it is, because it has to go through. Right. This kind of political process in order to do this. Having said that. Right. My biggest issue with the way what she said this week is that, you know, I saw this as a shot at Maxine Waters. Right. Maxine Waters, who has been kind of like, you know, shouting from the rooftop, we're going to impeach this guy. Right. From Rashida Tlaib. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And seeing as kind of
the
like.
One a, Omar.
Right. Exactly. A pushback on those folks. Right. And kind of trying to kind
of
like
women of color who's been mucking things up the past couple months.
Exactly. Right. And so one look, and Nancy Pelosi is good at this stuff. Right. She's good at kind of being the leader of a party in the majority. Right. The thing is, right, is that in this case, why would you just say, no, it's off the table? Now you got Trump out there basically saying, yeah, I talked to Nancy. Nancy said she's there's no way we're not going to impeach you. We're not interested in impeaching you. See, right. What the message should be is like, look, impeachment is the if you want news, you know, impeachment is the last step in the process, not the first step in the process. And it says, frankly, we've got a Republican Party that has failed to do its duty and kind of oversight for like since Donald Trump has been elected. And so what we're going to do is what we're doing already is we're doing that oversight and we're establishing that groundwork. Right. So we're doing these hearings. And if something were to come up, right, the Constitution says that this is what we must do. That should be. So the quiver is in, you know, you got your arrow in the quiver. Like, you don't take it off and say, nah, I'm not interested in that. I don't believe in it. Like, it's a freaking cartoon character or something. No. So, I mean, that was more my concern than anything else, was not whether or not, because I think, frankly, what the hearings are, we've talked about this before on the show, is like, I think the hearings are exactly where the place where the Democratic Party should be right now, is that you're going to dig up all this crap and expose all the freaking, just the corruption and the kind of, and the theft that is going on right now within the Trump administration. And then you lay all that stuff out, and then it's going to put us right up to 2020. So I'm good with that. So big news today also is that but I'm very excited to see this. Hundreds of thousands of students across the world are taking part in the Global Youth Climate Strike. This got started by it didn't get started solely by this. But what really kind of sparked and kind of encouraged the organizing efforts was a Swedish teenager, Greta Thunberg, who basically has held a solo protest outside of Swedish parliament starting last September for like weeks. And she's basically saying, like, look, you people have failed to do your job. and my future is now in jeopardy. And so, and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to speak truth to power, even if it's just me as a 14-year-old girl.
And now, she was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize?
Yes, exactly. And now you've got a movement that is basically taking is being encouraged and gaining courage from her actions and so many others, like organizations like the Sunrise Movement, for example, which, by the way, the sticker is on my car now. I went and got some Sunrise stickers. Very, very cool. And this is what we're going to need to see. Like organizing these coordinated strikes across the globe by young folks who basically are going to be at the receiving end of this future. So, you know, I just started reading The Uninhabitable Earth. Have you heard about this book?
No.
It's by I thought it was right here on my desk. Well, this book is called Uninhabitable Earth. I'm just forgetting the guy's name, but it's a really awesome book. I would encourage everybody. I'll put a link if I can remember to put it in. He was on Chris Hayes's podcast. Why is this happening? And it's pretty stark. It's pretty stark in some of the findings. Maybe I'll check it out and I'll come back to it in the fun half today. Fun half, not the fun half. See, I listened to the Majority Report too much. Come back in today's last call. Last thing in that thing here says Tucker Carlson. If you haven't seen what's been happening to Tucker Carlson this week, man, I just want to.
Hey, I never realized he was a racist.
Yeah, right.
That is like the second biggest scandal of the week, that Tucker Carlson is a complete and total piece of shit of a human being.
Yeah, exactly. That is like, oh, really? No kidding.
Tell me something I didn't know.
You mean he gives cover to white nationalists?
Don't tell me. This is like at the NPR show. Wait, don't tell me.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, Tucker Carlson legitimizes white nationalism? No, tell me it isn't so. Really? Well, the thing is, they got tape of this guy.
Never seen that one coming.
Right, they got tape of this guy, and I'm just going to read you three of them. Right, so whoa! That's not what I wanted. I'm going to read you three of them if I can get back to my page. Right, one saying this is Tucker Carlson saying, "Hey, if a Democrat came out in the 2008 election and says, you know what the problem is? It's these lunatic Muslims who are behaving like animals, and I'm going to kill them as many as I can if you elect me. Yeah, I'd vote for that guy." Right? There's one of the Tucker's thing.
But wait, was that 2016 or 2006?
That was in 2006. Did I say 16?
It could have been. I mean, no.
Might as well been, right? Well, like I said before, it's like, you know,
I was
2006.
Throwing the parallels there.
Look, 2006, the social mores were very, very different at those times, right? I mean, this was like 10 years ago, right? People thought really different about it, right? We should need historical context, right? It's like the founding fathers who had slaves. The same thing, Sean. Right? Like, he didn't know. It was just how people talked back then. It was freaking unbelievable. Here's another great one. I love women, but they're extremely primitive. They're basic. Yeah, everyone. No wonder Tucker can't get a date. And we have, how about this one? If you guys wanted to make your skin crawl on the edge one, I'm not defending underage marriage. I just don't think it's the same thing exactly as pulling a child from a bus stop and sexually assaulting that child. The rapist, in this case, has made a lifelong commitment to live and take care of the person. Right? And that was 2009. That was before Me Too, Sean, so there was no consciousness about this stuff.
It amazes me how, like, Christianity and, like, our puritanistic, like, roots and, like, our fucked up religious beliefs in this country, like, form our opinions on, like, sexuality. It's pretty obvious how, like, it's actually, like, really funny and comical how white supremacists, you know, can't get dates. Gee, no one wants to date the Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like yeah, okay,
so there you have it. Tucker Carlson.
And then Paula Page capped off the week.
Yeah. Well, poor, you know, because like after Tucker Carlson, now we know that Tucker Carlson was he's been bullied by Media Matters for America and other people who have been reporting on things that he actually said.
George Soros groups.
Yes. Paula Page, you know, he's not going to be no bully, though. He's not going to be bullied. He's not going to be no victim. Right. What did Paula Page give us this week, Sean?
I thought you listened to it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. So I got to talk about it. Okay.
No, I'll talk about it. So Paula Page went on a radio show, and he jumped right in, like, he unprompted, well, maybe he was prompted beforehand, like as like a strategizing session.
Yeah, there was like, hello, welcome Paula Page. That's his prompt.
And Paula Page said, I feel vindicated for what I've said in the past. Now we have this Omar in the country. Talking about Ilhan Omar and the shit she said. You know, it's pretty much like how Jewish people are ungrateful. They should be, you know, are ungrateful because they vote for Democrats and they give them all, they fund all the Democrats. 90% of the funding comes from them Jews.
There you go. Good old Paula Page, who is not the governor of Maine any longer, everyone. Thank God. So why he's getting a platform, right, on this talk radio station where you can say that. You can check out the link. You listen to it for yourself. You got me. You got me. Oh, man. Lots of stuff going on. Well, I think we need a little break right now. Sean, how about you?
Yeah, sounds good.
I need to fill up my coffee. I need to get going some more. Sounds good. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We want to remind you, you can support Raging Chicken Media by going to patreon.com/RCPress and becoming a member for as little as $5 a month. That's like the cost of like a beer. Right. A beer. And in Sean's case, right, it's just like that's bank money now because it's not even beer. Right. So you set aside this money. We'll get to that in today's last call. That's all we're talking about here. Right. We're just talking about just do Lent like Sean does Lent. Right. And become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
More dreaming, Bob.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1887. This was the day the International Brotherhood of Painters and Decorators of America got their start, issuing their first charter. John Elliott led the founding meeting. Prior to moving to Maryland, Elliott had been involved in painters' unionizing efforts since the 1870s in New York. He was a strong advocate of the eight-hour workday. In Baltimore, he founded Painters Local Union No. 1. Elliott called the meeting to discuss forming a national painters' trade union. Local Union No. 1 chartered 15 more locals from Pensacola, Florida to Peoria, Illinois. Painters in Toronto, Canada were also granted a charter, making the fledgling union a true international union. During the first year of operation, the union grew to represent 7,000 workers from 100 local unions. As membership continued to grow, so did the union's collective power. The Painters Union became known for their exceptional skill and quality craftsmanship. By 1918, the union had won the important victories of the 8-hour day and a 5-day work week for its members. By the 1920s, the union had grown to represent more than 100,000 workers. The painters, like many other unions, saw hard time during the Great Depression. As construction projects dwindled, union membership fell by nearly half. During World War II, union membership surged again, reaching as many as 145,000 members. The union painters worked on many government projects as valued craftsmen for the war effort. Today, the union is known as the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, with a membership of 160,000 current workers and retirees. These men and women include painters, drywall finishers, wall coverers, glazers, glass workers, floor covering installers, sign makers, display workers, and convention and show decorators. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. And as we get closer to St. Patrick's Day, everything's getting greener and greener. So here we go. Sean, in what is happening in PA this week? I know last week it was really kind of more... But this week there seems to, there's been a little kind of like, you know, I don't know, the lights come on.
A little more stuff happening, a little bit more movement and things.
Dawn is broken, I guess, yeah.
So there was two special elections on Tuesday night. Larry Krasner's staffer, who does a lot of work around gun violence, her son was murdered, fell victim to gun violence years ago. Mavita Johnson Harrell will become the first Muslim woman to ever serve in the Pennsylvania legislature. She had a really interesting road to get picked for the special election. The first two people, it was showed that they weren't paying their water bills or they had no utilities at their addresses that they listed. So there was residency issues involved, obviously, with that. And these are usually positions that go to the political hacks or not, I'm not going to say political hacks, really. It goes from the ward leaders pick these who's going to run pretty much in the Philadelphia special elections for the state house. Usually the ward leaders will pick people that are very sympathetic to the local political machine. But it seems like Movida Johnson-Harrell is the real deal. A lot of progressives are really excited about her getting elected, especially the work she's done with Krasner and on gun issues. And they're really looking forward to her being making it in the state house.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And she's she's pretty cool. The fact that you've got someone who's got to take
on. She is very religious.
Yeah, and so, well, someone who's taken on gun violence kind of directly, someone who is like, you know, kind of was, you know, a staffer for Krasner and is kind of like connected to his.
I mean, she has a leadership position within the Krasner office.
Yeah,
interim
yeah.
director. So not just even just a staffer, but she's an interim.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. So that's good. That's fantastic. So what I thought was kind of interesting, it's going to be interesting the first time that she gets to meet up with Daryl Metcalf.
since, at least it's not Frank Scavo.
Well, Daryl Metcalf, right? He voted against. This is in an article. It's from the Pennsylvania Capital Star, Stephen Caruso's piece, right? Did I just lose? Yeah, in 2008, Daryl Metcalf, remember Daryl, right?
Daryl Metcalf.
Daryl Metcalf voted against the resolution to recognize Ahmadiyya Muslim Community Convention because, quote, Muslims do not recognize Jesus Christ as God, he said on the House floor. So therefore, he voted against it. So, there you go. That's going to be interesting.
But you know what's like funny about this stuff with like religion and all? Hmm. God, Yahweh, and Allah are all the same fucking person, pretty much. I mean, the religion stems from the same, like all three major religions in this world stem from the same split off with Abraham.
Yep.
You know, so
there you have it. Wonders like will never cease. Wonders will never cease. Yeah, so pretty cool, pretty cool. But so that's huge. And then this other special election, that's been interesting as well.
Yes. Bridget Malloy Kozorowski, she blew out Frank Scavo in a district that was that Trump won by 7 points, which was pretty interesting, you know, especially for a special election, low voter turnout. Supposedly the voter turnout was almost around like 25%, which is abnormally high for a special election. Kozorowski is a nurse. We end up getting another very good pro-union, pro-nurse, pro-healthcare Democrat elected to the legislature in this. Frank Scavo, he fell in some hot water or Old Forge pizza over the past few weeks.
Did he now?
Yes.
Don't tell me there was a scandal.
So boomers on Facebook are typically like the worst generation to deal with on Facebook. On social media, because
first they really don't know how to use it very well. Second, yeah,
they show their racist views pretty easily. And so Scavo was caught sharing a bunch of racist memes before the 2016 election, before our social mores were a lot different than they were today. Before we tolerated that stuff, and going after Muslims and supporting Pizzagate and supporting all these other wacky conspiracy theories. And he obviously got blown out. And what really struck me about this race this morning, about this race, was that the New York Times sent a journalist to his election party or his campaign party with like 30 supporters. So you think about this in like an Old Forge, which like really their pizza's not that good. But that's time for another discussion.
We had that discussion in part last week. this is going to become a recurring theme. Dumping on Old Forge pizza.
But like, So, like, imagine, like, in Old Forge, Pennsylvania, a room of, like, 30 old, dying white people. The, like, the demographics of the Republican Party. This is, like, the cross-section of the Republican Party is, like, Scavo's election party. And I'm going to do some reading, like, you know, Chapo Trap House style, because this fucking article is hilarious. So it's going to be a second paragraph. It starts, but soon after they downed the last pitcher of light beer, the discussion took a darker turn. Many of Scavo's supporters were upset that he had drawn significant negative attention for a series of bigoted Facebook posts over the past 4 years, including ones that painted Muslims as infidels and others that promote the conspiracy theories like Pizzagate, the false story that Democrats ran a child sex trafficking operation out of a Washington pizza parlor. Democrats are rats, yelled Mr. Scavo's wife, Clint Karen, a local hairstylist, who started crying. She and others contended that he should have doubled down rather than apologize for the post, as he did in the closing days of the race. I'm furious, said Lauren Cummings, an Old Forge resident, who is also a county commissioner. Our poor president is getting hammered at this, and the same thing happened to Frank. It goes on. Another man interjected, "This is our tea party." Big applause followed. Far from the power centers of Washington, the early 2020 primary states, or money-rich coastal cities that fund money national campaigns, a shift in the political winds is growing stronger. The Republican Party and its candidates, particularly in state and local campaigns, are increasingly being reshaped in President Trump's image, adopting his laundry list of political opponents and his willingness to go to lengths to spite them. This is an excellent article in New York Times. Definitely recommend reading it. The quotes in this thing are just like fucking. Here we go. Next paragraph down. You should hear among Republicans in northeastern Pennsylvania region that has suffered with the gutting of the steel industry and that ravages the opioid crisis. Mr. Trump's language is endlessly repeated. He is not ensnared in several investigations of possible wrongdoing, but he's the victim of a witch hunt. The discovery of Mr. Scavo's anti-Muslim Facebook post was the work of fake news media over at the Capital Star. Looking at you right there, Stephen Caruso. The federal bureaucracy is scheming the deep state. Again, I did not realize a progressive or an independently funded media outlet consisting of four people is the definition of the deep state. But we have finally unearthed John Micek's true intentions on this planet to be a purveyor of the deep state.
There you go. But we got one last paragraph. Here's the one that follows the one last you read. But the most common reflection of Mr. Trump's brand of grievance politics and the reason Mr. Scavo's loss was treated as an existential threat in that Old Forge banquet hall was a pervasive belief that the country was being undermined by undeserving outsiders and the Democrats who represent them. And then I think that was captured perfectly with some of the audio that was captured at that very event.
Das war ein Befehl! Der andere Stein, das war ein Befehl! Wer sieht sie?
Just saying, I was just, you know, really good that the, you know, they thought to leave the tape recorder running. They didn't know Wagner was there.
Okay. But, I mean, like, think about, like, I mean, but, like, okay, so, like, this is exactly what the Republican Party has become.
That's right.
I mean, like, is Trump responsible for it? Partly, but, I mean, like, this groundwork has been laid well before Trump has been president.
Yep.
This is, like, 30, 40 years of talk radio, right-wing media infrastructure, the conservative movement, the religious movement, just all working in cahoots with each other, and this is the Frankenstein that they've created. Yep. I mean, like, you have boomers on Facebook sharing conspiracy theories, QAnon stuff, as if they are real. Like, I mean, and the thing about, like, this is, it's like, younger people can obviously see through that bullshit, but, like, this is how their echo chamber operates. Like,
well, I mean, look at that. I mean, did you see?
Facebook is a really good tool to look into the boomer echo chamber and just see how wrapped up in conspiracy theories a lot of them are.
No, absolutely. And I think that as much as we can kind of look at some of these statements and be like, oh, my God, and just kind of like, can you believe this? Sean, you're absolutely right. I mean, what this actually unveils is like this is the byproduct, right, of a concerted long term campaign and kind of media infrastructure and all this that has produced this. I mean, the fact that you got the mayor of Old Forge, right? He's embroiled in his own scandal. Did you see this in that same story?
Yeah. Right? Democrat, right? Or,
well, he's I'm not sure. Well, he basically said he went to Facebook and he said that the New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are treasonous and should be shot. Right? That was the mayor of Old Forge. Yeah, full stop. Yeah, full stop. That's it. Right? And this is the kind of stuff that is, you know, this is what connects this community here in Old Forge with that shooting that took place in New Zealand. Right? It's the same, like, disgusting underbelly.
Turning Point USA, Candace Owens, exactly. Like filth that is get shared. Charlie Kirk, you know, like all that stuff. That alt-right pipeline, like this is like, you know, this is like they are. This is who they are.
Right. And just as like, you know, this is and the same reason that you've got like for Chris, I mean, like, Chris Hayes doesn't talk about Fox TV anymore. Chris Hayes refers to it as Trump TV. Right. That you've got literally a network.
I mean, it's state TV.
Yes, exactly. And it's been Republican TV for a long time and right wing Republican TV for a long time.
Yes. I mean, these people are giving Tucker Carlson, who is a white nationalist, a platform.
Yep.
And they have no problem doing it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So there you go. Right here in Pennsylvania.
I mean, I was actually sort of surprised that they sent a reporter to this. I mean, like that story must have really caught their attention then, mm-hmm. like real quickly.
Yep. Well, and I think it's a kind of story too as well where it's in, you know, I think we're going to see it's in these areas, right? That especially kind of reporters from kind of, I mean, like
it's like what 2 or 3 hours to get there from New York
right,
City.
It's not that far, and but it's right
from Washington D.C. It's Pennsylvania is like the golden cat. I mean, like I talk about this all the time with Roxbury and others, like. Like we always like Pennsylvania is the it state. Like we are the it state on the East Coast. Like we are the ultimate swing state that people always want to talk about and dump money into. And like this is us getting more national attention for how fucking crazy our Republican politics has become.
Yep. It's crazy. Crazy.
I'm actually surprised like this type of reporting on Pennsylvania Republicans hasn't been happening since, like, I mean, we've been talking about it since 2011, how crazy this party has become.
Crazy. Oh, boy. Sometimes I just get frustrated, Sean. But, there you have it. So, but let's not assume that all the problems in Pennsylvania are limited to former coal country. Because right up here in Bethlehem, PA, Lehigh University is having its own little Me Too movement right now, where you have a professor, Professor Monica Miller, who has basically brought a federal lawsuit charging sexual harassment. And basically in the claims basically says that she was used as a sacrificial lamb to Lehigh University's own racial agenda to try to make it look more progressive than it actually was. She said, quote, and the indictment says, or the charges say that Lehigh sacrificed vulnerable young women who they permitted to be abused because its image as an unbiased and racially diverse college was more important, the suit alleges. Giving a sense, basically, what happened here is that there was the guy, it was the guy's name, James Braxton Peterson. He was a head of the Africana Studies Department and an English professor. Right? He was also African-American, but he was protected by the university. He was basically had some problems for a long time the university kind of knew about. And anybody who works in higher education knows this, right? Or any workplace for that matter, about how stuff gets buried. right? People refuse to deal with it. But I just want to give you a sense of what Miller had to deal with when she applied for at the job. This is from an article in Lehigh Valley Live. She says, quote, or this is from the article, Miller's sexual harassment allegedly began in 2013 as she applied to become an assistant professor of religion and Africana studies. Peterson would call her late at night under the pretense of discussing the job and made inappropriate comments, the suit states. When Miller came to campus for an interview, Peterson took her alone to a restaurant where he asked her to sit on his lap and to kiss him, the suit alleges. Miller refused his advances, but Peterson allegedly ignored her and began rubbing her leg under the table. During the dinner, he FaceTimed a mutual colleague to celebrate Miller being on campus for the video and commented on how sexy Miller's high heels were, the suit alleges. After the meal, Peterson dropped Miller off at Hotel Bethlehem and offered to buy her a drink at the bar. Miller felt pressured into accepting and stayed in close contact with her then-boyfriend via text, the suit says. Peterson allegedly tried to kiss her, and she turned her head. And it goes on from there. And apparently this was not the only instance of this. And, you know, what you had here, at Lehigh University in particular, was being monitored by the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. Basically, and said it was voluntary compliance after complaints that were followed by alumni of the university, which alleged the university did nothing to prevent an environment of racial hostility on campus. And so basically you had Peterson as being kind of the main, was being trotted out as kind of being the go-to person on diversity at the university. So they didn't want to touch him. And the result of this was to allow him to prey, especially on junior faculty and younger women coming into the department. So Lehigh is in for it, folks. The little castle on the hill. No. Crazy. So there's our Lehigh. We got one last thing. Where's our last thing for the day? Oh, yes. Your buddy, Meek Mill. Happy happy Meek Mill weekend, Sean.
Yeah. I guess city council is honoring Meek Mill.
Yeah. Are you happy for that?
Yeah.
You think he deserves it? Are you saying he's, what are you saying? He's undeserving? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think he deserves it. Absolutely. Considering the bullshit that he had to put up with. You know, and it shows you how unfair our criminal justice system is.
Yeah, pretty cool. Getting the acknowledgement for his work in the criminal justice reform. Meek Mill gets his own weekend in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia City Council. And I guess there's a resolution. I'm not sure about where the status of this was, a resolution to make this statewide and make Meek Mill Day or something like this.
Great. Yeah, I don't think the Republicans would want to vote for that in the State House.
No, you don't think Daryl would?
Yeah.
I don't think any of them would, actually. Not just Daryl. Oh, crazy. All right, cool. You got anything else going on in Pennsylvania, Sean?
We have nuclear bailout that's going on.
Oh, right. Nuclear bailout. 3 Mile Island, folks.
So Exelon or some nuclear industry in Pennsylvania is going to be asking for a bailout that is making some pretty interesting bedfellows. The Republicans are going to be Republicans, some Democrats, and the building trades are pushing for a bailout, while a bunch of conservatives, progressive groups like Keystone Progress and, you know, groups like the Commonwealth Foundation, obviously conservative groups, are completely against this bailout. And the environmental groups are also working on this legislation. It looks like this legislation will get passed, and it looks like people are trying to make this friendly, put riders in there to make more provisions environmentally friendly.
And there you go. And this is coming up right at the same time when you've got this basically it's a watchdog group that's kind of looking at what is it? 3 Mile Island Alert, right?
Yep. Ahead of this guy. Which is run by Eric Epstein, who ran for State House out here and he lost last year. Eric is a really good activist with Rock the Capitol. He was actually one of the first activists around TMI back in the 70s when it had its meltdown.
There you have it. So while that organization has put together a petition that is seeking enforcement action from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has to do with the steam generator tubes that were improperly installed and seem to be malfunctioning. They were malfunctioning. They were installed in 2010 and had been discovered 22 months later. So 2 years later, basically, they were starting to malfunction. Basically, the way that they were kind of installed, that they were rubbing up against each other and kind of falling down or wearing down. And so now people have alerted NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, about the problem before, but no action has been taken. So now they're filing a formal petition on that.
Well, at least the nuclear plant is downwind for me.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's right. As long as you're safe. You're not going to have to live in that.
But, I mean, like, you actually like think about it. Imagine if TMI did blow up back in the 70s when it did melt down and the meltdown happened. Like, you think about it, Harrisburg would be desolate. There'd be the Capitol would be just an empty shell. Like, I mean, it would be a complete ghost town.
Yeah.
This whole region would.
Yeah, dude, yeah, I remember that growing up. That was like one of my first like natural disaster like things. It was like real life, right? Since 79. So I was 10 years old. Right.
Was that like a big deal then? Like on the
dude,
news and all?
It was freaking huge.
Like I never never watched any of the news coverage or a documentary on it.
I'm telling you, I sent you that link to that documentary. It's worth it if you get, you know, really tired and just want to sit there and want to watch something. But it's seriously, it was, and it's actually, it's coming up on like anniversary. This is like what, 40 year anniversary, March 28th.
Yeah. And two of the biggest experts on that in the area are R.B. Swift, who I think he was a journalist. He's like one of the last remaining journalists from that era out here. That's when he moved to Harrisburg like 3 months before that meltdown happened. And then he became a big expert on it and everything. He's still a Capitol reporter up in the newsroom.
Yeah. I mean, look, that was my memory of that was like this, like, because this degree of nuclear power had not been, you know, around for all that long. Right. And this was the first major meltdown. I mean, obviously, I was 10 years old for the first one in my life. Right. But I mean, I remember the news coverage vividly. And like my friends and I would sit there and like we were worried that something was going to happen to us because you just didn't know. You didn't know what this was. Now, you got to remember, this is also in the middle of the Cold War. Right. Where, you know, we're living like whatever, 10 miles away from Griffiths Air Force Base, which is on like first strike target list. So, you know, we knew how long we had to live after the bombs came. So, you know, it was kind of like the meshing of this here, this nuclear power plant and living this Cold War environment. But the news reports on it was frightening. It was really frightening. You know, to see that stuff like that, I mean, like I think about like my damn lifetime. Right. To see number one, to see like one, the kind of the money being thrown on this up, but then also the potential of not keeping it up and running properly after that. The very same place that had it. You know what I mean? I mean, that's frightening to me that the memories are so short. But here you go. But don't worry. Sean's upwind.
I will say this. Like every couple of years, they send us the evacuation plans. Mm hmm. And there's just no fucking way, like, anyone's getting out of the city of Harrisburg or this, like, central Pennsylvania, like, around the Capitol Beltway with, like, I mean, we had a snowstorm, like, earlier, and it just showed you what happened, like, once the state lets everyone, like, the snowstorm we have in November, like, they let everyone out at, like, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was just 8 hours of gridlock.
Well, like Sean, that's a snowstorm, though. I mean, it's not a nuclear power plant melting down. It's a snowstorm. So, of course, it was bad. It would be different if it was a nuclear power plant meltdown. Everything would be fine.
But, I mean, like, there are no ways, like, to get out of Harrisburg. I mean, this area is just completely fucked if TMI ever exploded.
Yeah.
And the wind was blowing the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what's this? Strong winds up from the south. Bye, Sean. Because that is like a tunnel, like, you know, it's a nice little big half pipe. That stuff would be coming right up the river. Frightening stuff. But just, you know, wonderful, wonderful news from Pennsylvania. All right. Anything else in PA?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back after this with today's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back. Today is Last Call. We talk space news. We talk fun stuff. We talk beer or lack thereof. And whatever else is on our minds. I'll get the space news out of the way. It was a big week in space news and kind of like associated industries. One is that the big news was come out this week, before U.S. Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. Jim Bridenstine, who is the NASA administrator now, Trump appointee, basically surprised a few people by saying that NASA's huge space launch system, which was the largest rocket ever built, right? Looks like it may be sidelined. It's been delayed in terms of its completion date. It's run into overruns and obviously lots of costs. Some people call it the rocket to nowhere, right? To echo the bridge to nowhere stuff. But NASA has had a pretty firm plan on testing out its Orion spacecraft by June 2020. And Orion, if you remember, there was a test of Orion that went up on the Falcon Heavy rocket, SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket. But that was a really stripped down version of the Orion spacecraft and a lighter version of it. And that was successful. But the SLS, the Space Launch System, has been delayed. And so now there was an announcement of further delays. So it looks like the SLS will not be ready by June 2020. But Bridenstine basically came out and said, no, we're going to go by 2020, June 2020. And even if we have to use commercial spacecrafts to do that, and we're going to open that process up. The problem is that there does not exist a rocket that can get the Orion spacecraft kind of up that gets too heavy. So now the race is on for SpaceX, for Boeing, who's mired in its own issues right now with its 737 MAX plane, which has crashed. And now there's going to be all sorts of lawsuits, or even Amazon's Blue Origin. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with all this. But the key word, I actually watched this good chunk of this press of testimony, and I watched some of the press conference that he just recently gave about going to the moon. That if you remember, this was Trump's first order. Space order when he came into office was to get people back to the moon, and it astounds me that not more people are not just kind of like awed by this, and maybe it will as time gets closer, but it's remarkable to me. Like, and this is the 50th anniversary this year, and I think this is why they've been pushing so hard to get this done by 2020. 50 year anniversary of landing people on the moon, right? That's amazing. Right. I mean, they landed and now we're going back. Right. And now the call is not just to get back to the moon, but the call now is to get people and have a permanent presence on the moon as a scientific outpost in there. And so part of what this launch of the Orion is going to do is to kind of put stuff in orbit. And then we're going to have, we talked about this before, we talked about the space platform or kind of the space gateway or the lunar gateway, the project is called, that will basically be an international space station, except the space station will be around the moon instead of around the planet. So they're kind of on a pretty tight budget or a pretty tight timeline in order to get this done. Now, the thing to watch for our purposes here, right, is that what's subtly happened just then by Bridenstine saying that we're going to look at the commercial providers is that basically saying, look, we've got all these industries, right, that are now suddenly going to be potentially like going to infused with a whole bunch of cash from the federal government, right, our money. Right. And these are private industries. And now he just gave a talk, I think it was yesterday or today, or yesterday or the day before, about the plans for the kind of the near plans, next 5 years or so. And he's talking about a full commercialization and privatization of low Earth orbit. Like, so in other words, the International Space Station and kind of all kind of habitation around there. They are concretely making plans to establish this next tier of kind of capital expansion and free market, like free market entrepreneurism and kind of like, you know, lack of government regulation, and turning this over to these space companies, which are some of the wealthiest, you know, corporations on the planet. So this is like happening step by step. And because it's happening in space, most of us aren't paying attention to it. So again, you'll know about it here, obviously, because I'm the geek for the space stuff. And so there you have it. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens, to see if SpaceX is going to get tapped for that. We'll see. Other news this week is that there's going to be a swap out of some of the crew at the International Space Station. If you remember back in October, there was a launch that was taking place in Kazakhstan, where the only way we can get people to the International Space Station now, they're atop a Soyuz rocket, and they had to actually kind of bail out mid-flight in the launch because something went wrong. Two of those astronauts that were they had to bail out on that flight were actually back on this one, back in Kazakhstan, back up on the Soyuz rocket, and they made it successfully this time, the International Space Station. So two Americans and a Russian, one woman American, one male American are over there, which is kind of cool. And last night, Elon Musk decided to unveil the newest Tesla. So is this connected to the space news? Tangentially, yes. Sean's like, no.
Do like any of Elon Musk's like ventures make money or actually come to fruition?
Yes. I mean, if you look at Tesla is making money. If you look at Tesla's stock price, it's gone through the roof. Right? Now, again, does he meet his deadlines? No, he always has super ambitious deadlines. But look, a lot of these people are just kind of like saying, okay, you know, we're going to swallow that because of what he's doing. And look,
I feel like he's a cult leader than anything else, but
look, he's something. Elon Musk, I have all sorts of feelings about Elon Musk. Okay. I think one, he's a dangerous human being, right? Not because of him personally, but because of the amount of accumulated wealth he has. And he's basically writing policy, like just him and his crew writing policy for the expansion of the electrical grid to kind of support our kind of electrified vehicles, electric vehicle infrastructure, for future space policy, for what's happening in terms of the advancement of AI. Right? I mean, all this stuff is happening ad hoc. Right. Because we have outsourced all this stuff to private industry and we've allowed for that kind of accumulation of wealth. Right. Because, look, I mean, there is nobody who is doing that kind of like innovative work like within other industries yet. But it's really dangerous. I mean, how do you look? I mean, who else has developed solar panels like solar roofs that actually look good on a house and that can fully supply a house like as an autonomous kind of like, you know, self, I don't know, whatever, supplies itself, self-sufficient, right, in terms of energy needs, while it also powers its own car, right? That came out of that kind of research. And it's amazing research. But why on earth are we allowing this to happen in terms of kind of like the mass accumulation of capital, as opposed to this being something that should be about a public good? That so instead of this happening on the margins, this should be happening in the center. Because you got to remember, right, for every Tesla that is sold, right, there's like thousands of Ford F-150 sold, right? That's the thing that I always keep in my mind. So on the one hand, you've got, look, what if anything about what Tesla is doing is it is showing us what is possible. Right. The fact that you've got like I pass Teslas on the highway all the time to work now. Right. It's really wild. Right. The fact that he's basically going and saying he's going to put in this Model Y is basically going right at the American market that basically, you know, says that we love SUVs. So he's going to go after that with a kind of midsize SUV that is going to kind of have, you know, more battery range than some of the other than I think the S model. So it's crazy. So that's my update on Tesla. Sean's just been shaking his head the whole time saying, I can't freaking believe you're even talking about Elon Musk in even partially good terms. But whatever.
2 minutes of my life I'll never get back.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe this will help then. Workers at San Francisco's Anchor Brewing vote to unionize this week. They are one of the kind of like oldest, right, of the quote unquote craft breweries out there in San Francisco. And they sold out. Right? Anchor Brewing was bought out by Sapporo, which is a Japanese company. And within a year, Sapporo said, nah, we're not going to contribute anymore to your retirement. Oh, we're going to kind of we're gonna cut your wages and all this stuff. So they voted to unionize. And as we've talked about on this podcast before, that the labor conditions in craft brewing are not always the kind of most equitable. Right.
No.
And there's very few craft breweries that are actually unionized. So this is actually one. You start seeing the maturation of the industry. So you see the expansion of this. These labor issues are going to become more kind of more to the front. So we'll see. And the fact that they're doing it with the ILWU, the longshoremen, is the best. I mean, it's perfect. San Francisco longshoremen, the people who shut down the ports. I love you. So I will be if they get the union, I'm sure that it's not going to be they voted unionized. They're moving forward with it. They don't have a contract yet, obviously. The company's probably going to fight it. But as soon as they become a union company, I will be buying some Anchor Brewing. I love that. So I'm also going to put a link down today. I'm not going to go through them all. But my friend Stu over there in Northern Ireland, he's been telling me over the past few years that the craft industry is starting to actually bubble up in Ireland. And, you know, because Ireland's always been, you know, God, center of beer land in so many ways. I mean, yes, there's Germany, but, you know, whatever. That's Germany. But, you know, Guinness Stout, Irish beer, so much part of the culture. And the fact that you see this kind of a burgeoning craft brew industry in Ireland is kind of interesting. So I put a link down in here. There's some Irish craft brews, five of them. I think there's a list of five of them that you might want to check out the St. Patrick's Day. They're probably going to be tough to get your hands on. There are a couple in there, or might be one at least in there that you could only get at the brewery in Ireland. So if you happen to be over there, that's awesome.
Oh, and I also
go ahead.
Saw a really good story on England and how they start a government program to save their pubs.
Oh, very good.
It was on NPR. I don't have the link for it up, but it just reminded me. So in England, the pubs are now being bought out by community co-ops, or turning to like community-owned, community-run pubs.
That's the way to go.
For communities to save. So it's a program ran by the government to help communities save their pubs from closing, which have become a...
Yep. I look at Free Will Brewing, right? And the people at Free Will probably hate me for this, but that's fine. that brewery has become such a part of the community, right? And it really has. And they've done, I mean, they're there. It's been a gathering.
Same thing for like Forest, Maine, too, in Ambler.
Yeah. And you could imagine if that became a community resource, right? Became part of that community, right? So you say these folks, like in the best case scenario, the folks who own the brewery, like they kind of do this for a while, stuff like that, and they want to move on and do something else. So instead of selling it off or something like this, right, it gets turned over into a cooperative that's kind of run by the community. That would be so freaking awesome. But, you know, we have to look to our horizons for utopias, Sean. That's what we got to do. Which you reminded me now, by the way, this was huge news. Right. Shippensburg University just launched a program in brew science. Right. So as a way to tap into the science and history of brewing and fermentation and to support the craft brewing industry in this state, Shippensburg University, with a grant from the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, has started up a program in brew science. So they've got an introduction to a home brewing course. They've got some things that are specific to the industry. I wanted to get to pull this up for you real quickly. 2 weeks ago, the Brew Science, they have a speaker series that just got kicked off. And they had Dr. Allison Feeney, who gave there and kind of came to kind of speak about their series. But do check out Shippensburg University, their Brew Science speaker series. They're probably going to have some more stuff. And that was kind of cool. State System of Higher Education, right? Those are my people over there. Congratulations. Very, very cool program and something to kind of check out. So that's fun news, I have to say.
Yep.
Couple things. Free Will has got sexy goodies. This is not a new one, but sexy goodies will be released once again. They did a new can design. You can go check that out. That's a New England style WIPA brewed with flaked oats, flaked barley, and milk sugar. It's hopped with a collection of Calypso, Mosaic, Citra, and Apollo. Beer is smooth, gentle mouthfeel with notes of macrat lime leaves, right? Strawberry and blah, blah. Comes at 8.5%. That's a pretty good beer. That's going to be available tomorrow, Saturday. At both locations of Free Will. And big news for Free Will. Now, there's been some talk about this for a bit, but they confirmed it this week that it is opening up in Souderton, PA. It's joining forces with the Broad Theater. Broad Theater is the kind of the old historic theater in the center of Souderton, which is currently under renovation. And it's right in the center of town. And Free Will is going to be operating a bar in the lobby. And they are kind of teasing it out now because they're looking forward for a launch with a viewing. They're calling it a viewing focus experience with beverages in hand. That will be the Broad Theater in Souderton, PA. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. And surprising to me, this week, Sean is like he's doing Lent in his very own way, aren't you, Sean?
What's Lent?
It's the thing that you're doing, whether you know it or not.
Atonement. I've gone to the desert for 40 days.
Sean has gone to the desert for 40 days.
Now, so it's actually been over a week now since I actually had my last beer.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's the story, people. So there you go.
Yeah. it's that time of year, I think, for good like self-care. And, you know, I've been going out for a bit over the past couple months. Kind of just want to shock my body. Like use shock treatment into like just breaking that habit of going out to the bar and stuff like that. And, you know, there's some things I want to get in the future. Like a camera lens.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be happening soon.
He didn't get it. Remember last week in the podcast, everybody, Sean was, I didn't know if he was gonna be able to hold out, but he has, he's waiting.
No, I'm waiting to build my, I'm just waiting for a couple more months and then I'll be able to get it. And it's like almost here.
It's almost here. A couple months is almost here. Well, there you have it. Sean without a beer.
Let's see if I can make it a full month.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's good because, you know, it's good to make sure that, you know, you kind of cleanse your body of any kind of mind altering substance for a period of time. just to make sure.
Not that.
Not that kind of Lent. You just go in organic. That's all.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, like, it's also the type of thing where, I mean, like, it's the one thing I've really noticed is like how much harder it's been for me to sleep. This past week,
mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I guess I would say I was having like slight, like moderate withdrawal symptoms of like not drinking, not like shakes or anything, but like getting headaches the first couple of days, or not being able to sleep at nighttime. And it's amazing how much even like that shit affects you.
Yeah. Oh,
like yeah. Even like having 2-3 beers a night and you just stop drinking. Like, you're still going to get a headache and everything. And, like, yeah, I had the urge to rip someone's head off earlier this week, and I resisted and didn't overcame that urge.
That's good for you, Sean. Very good. Good choice.
But, I mean, like, no, it for me, it's more of like once the spring comes, start walking, taking pictures more. As I said, I don't have my bike. Got stolen. So I had to, you know, I'll be walking that mile instead of taking my bike around the city. But, and, you know, instead of like sitting at a bar stool, you know, when it's 65 and sunny out, mm-hmm. I would rather be on the riverfront.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, this is interesting. This is, and I mentioned this.
And also, like, thing I also did was like, I moved my meals back like mm-hmm. An hour and a half.
Yeah.
So it's like when I'm done eating, happy hour is pretty much over and it's like saving money that way. Like yeah. More like the times I would normally go to the bar. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, the other thing, I mentioned this earlier on, there was an interview on the Antifada. This is Jamie from the Majority Reports. This is her podcast that she does. And they interviewed Kim Stanley Robinson, with my favorite science fiction writer of all time. And it was an awesome interview in so many ways. Seriously, when I sent that to you as a link, I seriously listened to it. It's actually kind of cool. The sound quality is – I was – very disappointed, and I have to say, because the sound was like all over the place. You had to kind of like, you can listen to better with the earphones, just because the levels are so different from the different people, and he's calling in. Anyways, he talks about some of that stuff about like, he said, you know, he said something like, well, he said, it was like a rant against screen, something like this. But he said, like, you know, he grew up, one of the things for him is when he became kind of radicalized in the 70s, and 60s and 70s out in California, is that one of the things that he found, he didn't get into the whole kind of like psychedelic drug scene, right, as much, right? That wasn't just kind of his thing. He got into the Sierra Nevadas, as he puts it, right? So he'd do these kind of big hikes and do all this kind of stuff. And he said, you know, and the part of it is like, you know, they found over the years that what he would always say to his kids, and he'd say, like, look, if you want that kind of dopamine fix that you get from kind of sitting there and playing your games, right, you're going to get a better dopamine fix than by going out and actually just like sitting by the riverside and looking at the water and throwing stones in the water than you will if actually you're sitting there really playing these video games and stuff. And it's actually kind of an interesting way of thinking about it. There's actually those kind of things that our bodies crave, things like dopamine, right, to feel good. We get that stuff in part from kind of being out and walking around and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good time. You know, it's a good time to do this, Sean, I think, you know, because it's kind of like, yeah, kind of go out, walk around. I mean, I know how you love being out by the water anyways. Like all those pictures of the birds and stuff that you had last year were freaking awesome.
Well, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
With like getting this lens, what I'm also going to do is get an extender mm-hmm. for it too. So like with the mechanics of the camera, I'm going to get geeky here. There's already like a 1.6 crop factor with the sensor size. So it's 70 to 200 times 1.6. So it's really like 110 to like 400. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really good zoom in itself right there. And then after that, you get a 200 extender on there. It's like, it's actually like 110 to like 370 is like the exact math or something like that. So then it becomes like a 600 millimeter lens. Mm-hmm. So then you have that extender on there. You can get all the way across to those islands on the other side of the river and be able to shoot some of the birds. Like, I mean, we have a lot of egrets, cranes, herons, all different species of those birds that occupy the riverfront, which are actually pretty cool to see because for me growing up in Philly, you don't really see any great blue herons flying around the concrete yeah. jungles of the city.
Right. No.
So
that's awesome, man. I can't wait to see some of your pictures start to appearing online and stuff again. It's always, I always enjoy them. I'm just kind of like, you know,
and that's one of the things I want to make a really good priority this year is to like, start doing some wildlife and nature photography. So I feel like with a nice long lens, it gives you the ability to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool, man. Any other news and blues for the week?
No,
me neither. Any plans for the weekend?
I'm going to try to stay dry again this weekend. I'm on a roll. Don't mess it up.
I'm on a roll. There you go. All right, everybody. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, wishing you a happy happy weekend. Happy Meek Mill weekend, actually. Hope you have a good one out there. The weather seems to have broke a little bit, so hope you're going to enjoy those little tastes of spring. I have to say, I say two things on closing. One, I already ordered some plants because I'm going to do some more gardening here. And part of the reason why I'm encouraged to do this is because finally I got my little CPAP machine for my sleep apnea, and I've had 3 days in a row now where I've actually been using it, and lo and behold, I can think again. It's amazing. So I'm very, 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 very thankful. That number one, I've got a union. Number two, I've got good medical insurance because of that union. And number three, that I was able to get this this treatment that's helping me feel better. So Medicare for all, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Sean, I'll see you next week, man.
See you later.
All right. We are out of here. Check us out. Patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member. $5 a month. See ya.
I just don't believe in it. They wanted me to impeach President Bush for the Iraq War. I didn't believe in it then. I don't believe in it now. It divides the country unless there's some conclusive evidence that takes us to that place. Thank you.
I think she's got impeachment mixed up with the Mississippi River.